Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's a quick getaway of free speech, because just when you thought it was safe, now we've got to make a quick getaway. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send badly needed fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it in to 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. Operators are standing by. We have with us Paul Stevenson. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Patrick.
Well, thank you for coming on. And, things have changed really fast ever since we got into December. I guess these jihadis started marching on, what was it, the 29th of November? Was it the 29th or the 27th? I lose track.
Less than a week ago.
Apparently the day before, well, maybe they started doing things before we heard about it. I'm not quite sure. But according to Alistair Crook, the day before...
Aristotle Crookie.
according to Aristotle Crookie, a British diplomat who's on... speaking like on first name terms with Assad, apparently. I mean, he talks about his conversations with Assad, and he says Assad went to Moscow the day before this started, and I guess left his family there, then went back to Syria in time to be deposed. But of course, he also kind of arranged for a relatively peaceful transfer of power. Basically, he just gave up.
No, I heard that Assad may have had his wife and family out of there a few days even before all this went down.
That's what I was just saying.
Yeah, but I think Assad did just basically give up. I mean, I was kind of laughing to myself when I thought about this in a kind of an Irish way. In a kind of an Irish humorish way, where I was kind of thinking, you know, maybe Assad just thought, you know, F it, you know, I've had enough of this. I mean, it's just like, it's such a, that country, you know, it's been pulled and pushed in every direction. And of course, this is manifesting itself now. It's a free for all. The vultures are, you know, and the wolves are feeding on the carcass of Syria. But I was actually thinking, maybe there's just a human element to this, where Assad's got a nice family, he's got a beautiful wife, and he's got a family, and he thought, you know what, I've had enough of this. You know, his background, his father was a hardcore guy where, you know, he was born, you know, to be a leader, and he was a very strong guy. But apparently Assad himself, his brother was supposed to take over that position, and for whatever reason, I don't know why, but he didn't. I don't know the history enough. But this guy's
he died in a car accident.
Okay. So this guy, yeah. So Assad kind of inherited the situation. I don't think he ever really wanted it. And you got to remember, this guy is a human being, and that country. Imagine trying to run that place. Imagine trying to like. And I'm not saying the way he controlled it was good. I don't know how much is propaganda. How much. It, you know, his Western propaganda and how much of a horrible dictator he is or was. But the point is, I don't think he ever really wanted to be in that position. And, you know, I don't know. I just think there's an element of it where he just thought, I've had enough of this. You know, I don't need this stress. And could you blame him? I mean, well, you know... Yeah, well, we haven't been in that position. If you were born, if you're like, put yourself in his shoes for a minute, as a human, you know, let's, I know that's kind of lowering the bar in terms of understanding, but, you know, apparently he's like, he wanted to be an eye doctor or something. He was like educated in London.
He was an eye doctor.
Yeah.
He was an eye doctor, and then his brother died, and he had to come back to Syria to take over the family business.
Yeah, so there's a meme around, it's a kind of a joke, you know, in terms of, like, immigrants from that part of the world. It's like, you know, Assad's one of the few actual eye doctors or immigrants that we'd actually like to have here, you know? You know, because we're told that, you know, immigration and diversity is our strength, where all these brain surgeons come from Africa and the Middle East. You know, that's another story, of course. You've got people now saying, you know, you got the Western media and all these Syrians saying, oh, we're no longer refugees. You know, our country's freed. You know, well, go back then. So you have the whole issue of Syrian refugees. Can you go back now? Apparently, we're told that this new terrorist leader, he's a pretty chilled out, diverse guy now. So maybe are we going to see all these immigrants from Syria go back now? Because I'll tell you what, the immigrants that come from Syria, they're not Christians. They are very dodgy people, a lot of them. And even if they say they're Christians, like the Iranians do, they're not. They just see it as a ticket out of their hell holes, and it's understandable, but it's not really our responsibility. You know, I'm sick and tired of Europe essentially being destroyed demographically, which is not a small thing. It's irrevocable because of Israel's interest, because of some little shithole in the Middle East that should never existed, and I hope doesn't exist for very long. You know?
Well, okay, so obviously everybody who listens to this show knows I was not out there saying Assad's about to be overthrown. Keep your eye on Syria. And nobody else was either. And, you know, even Aristotle Crookie, I don't think he was out there saying it. But
nobody was. How come nobody saw this coming?
Yeah. So, I mean, that can mean that it was maybe it was impossible to predict. Maybe it wasn't even that intentional. Who knows? Maybe when Erdogan said, you know, pushed the button and said, "Okay, you guys, you got my permission to go." Maybe they didn't know that they were just going to meet with no resistance and take over the country. I don't know. Some people, you probably never saw this movie, but some of my boomer audience might have. There was a movie called The Mouse That Roared, and it had, who was in it? I think that that British guy who played the Pink Panther, was he in it? You know, he was actor. It often played multiple characters in a film. You know who I'm talking about.
I can see his face, yeah.
Yeah, it'll come to us later. But at any rate, it was a comedy movie, and it was filmed maybe in the 60s. And in the 60s, the 1940s and the Marshall Plan and all of that was a recent memory. And so there was this tiny little country in the middle of Europe. I forgot what it was called. And it had big fiscal problems. It was running out of money, and they needed money. And so what do you do? Well, somebody had the idea, if we fight a war against the United States and lose, they'll give us a lot of money, just like, you know, they did to Germany and Japan. They'll give us a lot of money. So let's declare war on them and lose. And so they managed to go over to the United States on their antiquated transports, go walk down the street in Manhattan with swords and chainmail, I think, and somehow managed to capture the Q-bomb, which was a recently developed super weapon. So they managed to phone back to their little European principality, and the prince says, "Well, did you fight the war? Yeah, and did you lose? No, we won. And they won the war. And it was completely unexpected. Somebody could go back and watch that. Is it relevant? Did these people actually know what was going to happen? I don't know. But just getting back to Assad and the potential that there's a kind of a human aspect to him. If you ever saw him interviewed, you know, and he spoke very good English. He spoke very good French.
he looks like quite a nice guy.
He does.
He doesn't look like how he's portrayed. He looks like quite chilled out kind of a fella. He just doesn't look the part for that kind of position. I've always thought that about him. And by the way, you know, I don't know how old he is, but he looks like he's about 21.
Yeah, I guess he's late 50s, maybe. I don't know. But he had been in London. He was a practicing eye doctor, was a surgeon, an eye surgeon. And then his brother died. His father was the dictator and had been for quite some time and was intent on keeping the presidency within the family. So Assad went back.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, he went back and wound up taking over the country because his older brother had died. And so, you know, there was a short period of time where he was groomed for it, but it wasn't as if he had been groomed for his entire life. And then of course, how has it been for him? He wasn't in office that long, maybe 5, 6, 7 years when there was the attempt to overthrow him through the Arab Spring. And so his presidency has mostly been, over a country that's in civil war. He hasn't had control over the country. You've had these really harsh sanctions so that the situation in his country got far worse. I mean, you hear David Duke, he went to Syria, probably late 1990s or early 2000s. And he'll talk about it in such glowing terms, what a great place it was. But now, do they only have like a couple hours of electricity a day in Damascus? And the army soldiers are only getting paid like less than $10 a month, and the generals get paid less
$40 a month. When people talk about the collapse of Syria, if your generals are being paid 10, or not even your generals, but your average soldier is being paid $10 a month, and your generals have been paid $40 a month, I mean, I'm sorry, but
where the rebels are getting a couple $1,000s a month, maybe.
Yeah, they're getting, you know, the Pentagon wires them in a couple of $1,000s every month, or Mossad, whoever. I don't know where it comes from, but or Turkey, who knows? All part of the same matrix. And you know, if you've got a beautiful wife and you're looking at all this, and you got children, and you never wanted this position in the first place. Well, maybe that'll explain his passive behavior over the last few months. I just think the guy, he's had enough, and it's probably his wife is saying, you know, there's too many wolves at the door. You know, you never wanted to do this in the first place. Do you need to smoke all the time? You know, it's just like, enough is enough. I mean, I don't blame him. You know, I really don't. You know, I don't blame him at all. And I don't blame the Syrian soldiers who are, what, $10 a month? How the hell do you live on that? I mean,
well, and if you're in an economy that's collapsed, everything's barter and grift and whatnot, $10 a month.
I mean, if we look at Greek tragedies and some of the characters, you know, we don't, you know, when we're looking at those kind of, you know, historical stories. We do look at the personal elements of things, you know. You know, this guy Assad, he's not Benjamin Netanyahu. He's not Putin. He's not even Joe Biden. You know, I don't think he was cut out for all of this. He doesn't look like it. He apparently, like I say, he was educated in London. He wanted to be an eye doctor. And, you know, I feel for him. And, you know, good luck to him. You know. But, of course, it's now left a complete vacuum in Syria, and it didn't take too long. I mean, this whole thing collapsed on Sunday. I saw reports on Monday where some of the jihadi groups who were previously united in one goal of removing Assad were starting shooting each other. Then you had, and I as early as Monday, people are talking about it now, but as early as Monday, you had certain elements of that jihadi group that were talking about marching on Jerusalem and that the Palestinians in Gaza, their patience will be rewarded and that they're coming to Jerusalem. And then you've had a complete psychopathic reaction from Israel. They've taken that land. They've extended that land in the Golan Heights, the buffer zone, for temporary and for security. But they are now, their tanks and their air force, they are like, apparently the last time I saw, less than 10 kilometers from Damascus. And they apparently, 480 was the last time I saw the number of airstrikes on Syria. So what the hell is Israel doing? And this is what we were talking about offline. Because Israel does whatever it wants. It doesn't care about international opinion. It doesn't care about anything. It always does what it wants. And, you know, and all this rhetoric about, you know, about condemnation and rhetoric. It doesn't matter. The Israelis know it doesn't matter. They just do what they want. Ah, we'll deal with that later. Whatever. And yeah. this is why I get frustrated, because, you know, this Israeli regime, it always does whatever it wants, and it doesn't care about international opinion, because no one ever stops them, apart from those adorable little Houthis with their principles. Apart from that, they're all, everyone else is compromised, and, well, whatever, we'll see what happens, you know. I mean, and you know, and Israel, in typical fashion, you know, these guys initially came out, this guy Golani, which means of Golan, because that's where he's from, Golani. You know, they come out and they say they want good relations with Israel. And then Israel's thinking, what? We have a neighbor that wants good relations with us? Well, no, we can't have that. So, you know, so you know, Israel is like bombing the hell out of these people. And God knows who they're killing and what they're doing. You know, it's just like 480 strikes. So Israel, you know, in typical fashion, even when the neighbors say they want good relations with them, they have to say, nah, we're not having any of that. We can't have good relations with any of our neighbors. What we do with our neighbors is we bomb the hell out of them. So, I mean, you know, Israel's just going crazy, and the rest of the world just sits back and says,
the rest of the so-called Western world.
This is why I was attacking, why I was so angry about Putin as well. You know, the Russians have condemned it. It's not like they, you know, they're indifferent to it. They've condemned it with their rhetoric. But do they do anything? No, they don't. They just let Israel crack them.
Yeah, well, I mean, they did something in 2015 when doing something was viable. Before moving on to Israel, I want to finish up with Assad. And I don't, you know, I never met him. I'm not an expert on this area, and I didn't predict any of this. If the human element that we're discussing, like the very personal element, his family element, if that's a factor, it also may be, and I don't know, but it may be that he looked around and said, for, you know, the past 13 years, 14 years, my opponents have been saying Assad must go, and they've been torturing my people in order to make me go. And, you know, I've hung on and hung on. And at this point, it doesn't look like I'm going to be able to lead my people out of this mess. So I might as well resign. I don't know if that was part of his thinking, but it may well have been.
Get more tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get more tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get more tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it, contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A 5-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. But I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
I've hung on and hung on, and at this point, it doesn't look like I'm going to be able to lead my people out of this mess. So I might as well resign. I don't know if that was part of his thinking, but it may well have been. I think back to December of 1991 when Gorbachev was presiding over a rapidly disintegrating Soviet Union, and Yeltsin and his counterparts in Belarus and Ukraine had just declared the Soviet Union null and void, which they had no constitutional power to do. But so Gorbachev could have fought over it. And a lot of probably a typical leader of a country would. They could have descended into civil war. But he, rather than that, he just said, "Okay, I'm going to leave." And he convened the Supreme Soviet, which was the parliament, and requested that they constitutionally dissolve themselves, so that his opponents, who had just pushed them out, would at least be able to get a fresh start, a fresh legal start. And Assad, it seems that you know, he left. And his prime minister volunteered to be some sort of transitional caretaker. And I assume that would be with Assad's
blessing and instructions. So I don't know, but it seems as I guess he saw the writing on the wall. He didn't think it, for whatever reason, whether they were personal, whether it's concern for his family, whether it was concern for his people, he didn't think it was worth fighting for. Maybe he didn't feel he had the ability to do it. Maybe he didn't have the stomach for any more violence. I mean, obviously, he presided over a system that had harsh elements to it. You know, prisons. It was there was that aspect of it, but that wasn't of his making. This is something he inherited from his father, and his father, I'm sure, inherited that kind of political culture as well. So I guess he had enough. And is this because the Iranians or the Russians pulled the rug, or did the Iranians and the Russians just accept reality and not, you know, they had bailed him out and bailed out. They had bailed out his government in the last decade. And maybe they just said, OK, this is a sunk investment. We're not getting anything out of it. It's time to cut our losses, which is a lot different from simply cutting and running or abandoning him
So that is one narrative that has emerged, that the Iranians and the Russians, they have like done everything to try and help him and encourage him and help, you know, whatever, you know, apparently Russia, you know, offered a loan to them to make it a tourist hub for Russians and to build up their military. And you have this situation where Assad, you know, just refused these things. But, you know, that's one narrative, you know.
Yeah, and perhaps them thinking he was ultimately going to get a better deal from the Gulf states and by extension, Israel and America would let up on him. But that wasn't forthcoming.
Yeah, so, you know, but it's easy to say, you know, if you're the Iranians and the Russians at this point, where, you know, depending on who you listen to, it's a humiliating defeat for Russia and Iran. They dropped the ball here. So, you know, the finger pointing is at Assad. But as we spoke about, you know, Assad maybe has got some personal reasons where, you know, he's had enough. I do still think the Iranians and the Russians have dropped the ball here. We talked about the human element of Assad. Putin is not Assad. And I've looked at footage of Putin in the last few days. He looks tired. He looks old. Mm-hmm. He doesn't look very refreshed.
I do too.
Do you agree with that?
No. I was saying I like the past few days I feel old and tired too.
that's yeah, me too. Yeah, but you know, Putin looks a little tired. He looks a little irritable. Lavrov, when he was talking about Syria, was uncharacteristically ornery. You know, they're not happy with the situation. Meanwhile, Israel's doing what it wants again. And this is why I get so frustrated with Israel, because like I said, I can be a hothead sometimes. I said to you off air when I was like, you know, condemning Putin, said he needs to resign. But there are those people in Russia that feel the same way. You know, he's dragged out this war in Ukraine. And now, you know, he could be more vulnerable now. Most people would turn you away. I don't listen to a word they say. They don't see you as I do. I wish they would try to. I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Have you ever planted a tree for your home garden, orchard, or farm? Well, you'll know how frustrating it is when deer don't stop nibbling at them and you lose years of growth. We have a very economic solution called Tree Savers. It's basically a greenhouse tube at a very economical price. Most of the tubes are $3 to $4. Depending on the length that you want. Very easy installation. Check us out at furion.com. Furious Growth, that's furion.com. Susanna's Secret Real Essential Oils of Nature would like to thank you and RBN listeners for your previous purchases. We're announcing that we have a new waterless diffuser in stock with a full 1-year warranty. You just insert the bottle to the top, screw it in, tip it upside down, set your timer, or it's also motion activated at furion.com. That's furion.com.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org, T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
But there are those people in Russia, they feel the same way. You know, he's dragged out this war in Ukraine, and now, you know, he could be more vulnerable now. And, you know, what happens if they compromise and do the same thing to Iran as they've done in Syria over the next year or whatever? Then Putin's very vulnerable. You know, so I don't know. I mean, I do understand the frustrations against Putin. I've always thought, and you look at the Minsk agreements and you look at some of these other things, I just think Putin, for whatever reason, doesn't understand what he's dealing with. I really don't, you know. He seems to play by one set of rules, and you see it epitomized in Israel. They don't have any rules. They only have aggression. And that's why they're successful, I think, you know.
Well, are they? I mean, the thing about Israeli success is that or Jewish success historically is they always push it too far. And if I was a gambler, I would wager that they have pushed it too far, and we're in this period of transition where there's going to be a massive backlash and there's going to be a massive retrenchment of power. That's what I bet. I don't know. It hasn't, right? You know, right now maybe they're at the peak of their power.
But that backlash is not going to come from Vladimir Putin. I'm sorry. That's why I said he needs to be removed, because I don't know who you want to put in there, but they need to address the reality of what they're dealing with. And they're not. There's only one language these people understand, and it's not a language that Vladimir Putin understands or speaks. They don't. You have to put these people down. They are a mad dog. And if you let this mad dog do what it wants to do, it'll just continue to do what it wants to do, and it'll cause even more chaos. And I don't think Putin's got the stomach for it. I don't. You know, it's like, I'm not on my own with that. There is increasing frustration in Russia, you know, with how he deals with things. It's like you have like one player understands one set of rules, and then you got Putin on the other hand understanding another set of rules, and it just doesn't work. You know, I don't know. I just think they need to, I don't know. I'm not sure he's the right guy for it. As much as I admire him, you know?
Well, this is the way I look at it. Okay, so you had a guy in 1933 in Central Europe. Who had a flair for fashion, and he took on Jewish power in a much more direct way, and had a fair amount of success with it for a while, but in the end, it just didn't work out for him.
And well, he tried at least.
He tried, and then you know, and then what happened to his country? His country, it was burned, incinerated. It seemed to come back for a while, but it's gone again. You look at and you know, we were talking about Assad and David Duke. He always remembers fondly going to Syria. He had in Damascus. He had this massive outdoor speech he made. I'm not sure why or what the venue was, but it's on the internet. You can find it somewhere. His speech in Damascus in front of like 20,000 people. And he's speaking in English, but I guess it was a translator, and he remembers it as such a nice developed country, but it's you know under Bashar al-Assad's rule, and you know it's not a fair world. It's obviously not a fair world, but under his rule, it's become intolerable for most of the people there. It's not a fair world. But you look at Putin. He's been in power for this month. It makes 25 years since he became acting president. And how like Russia has come out from absolute humiliation to becoming to be extremely strong, powerful. Its military has the most relevant power. You know, they can't necessarily have carrier task fleets off the coast of Peru or Venezuela, but they don't need it. One thing I always like to put in perspective is from view of Russians, or at least Russians who are old enough. War doesn't mean 10,000 people dying or 100,000 people dying. War. First World War, 20 million citizens of the Russian Empire, closer to 30 million in World War II. And what he's done with Ukraine is some people would say, oh, he should have blitzkrieged it. And you never know. But the outcome is he's winning the war while keeping casualties way below historic levels of Russian wars, plus during that time has turned this Russia-China axis into the center of a newly emerging economic order. And so
the counter argument to that, and you know I admire Putin,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, he was in Syria for a reason. And he's lost Syria. And by the way, by all accounts, his little bases there are coming under attack as well. You know, so I'm not on my own in thinking that Putin has dropped the ball here. I think Putin himself thinks he's dropped the ball here, looking at his irritability. Mm-hmm. They were in Syria for a reason. We're all in the same boat. This thing is it's thrown a complete spanner in the works, really. You listen to all these commentators and they're like all of a sudden disagreeing. I'm still figuring it all out myself, as to the implications of it. I don't know how many of these people you've been listening to, Here Comes the Judge and some of the other people. They're suddenly not in agreement. You know, they're in agreement with some things, but they're like, you know, some of them are like very much in disagreement with everything that's happening. But, you know, Israel, 480 attack bombs, they're just completely wrecking the place. And the Russians have come out and condemned this. I mean, you know, this is an example of what Israel does. You know, give them an inch, and no one stops them. No one's going to stop them. They'll end up like controlling Damascus probably by tomorrow.
You got to be careful what you wish for. I don't know what's going to happen. The idea that there's going to be a nice, peaceful transfer of power the way there was from Gorbachev to Yeltsin, in spite of whatever Assad did trying to hand over the government in an orderly fashion, that's probably not going to happen. This guy with his 40,000, what's his name, Jalani, with his 40,000 troops, a big hunk of them, easily a third of them being foreigners from Central Asia and elsewhere. Are they going to be able to control the country? So, you know, there are all these various forces in the country, Turkish-backed jihadis. There's the American-backed Kurds. There's all sorts of forces there. Other army, like the American-backed, what was it called, the Syrian National Army. There's all these different forces. And of course, the Israelis are operating there. It's likely going to be a mess. Israel might have thought it was benefiting in the aughts when there was a civil war there that they were not that involved in. They would fly over and bomb whenever they felt like it, but they didn't have any troops on the ground. The Israelis have not fared very well with troops on the ground either in Gaza or in southern Lebanon. They got to be careful what they wish for. But the thing is, the people who are running Israel now are not the people who have run it historically for the past 70 plus years. It was the Labor Party, then the Likud Party, but in both cases, it was largely like former military people. A lot of the prime ministers were either former generals or former terrorist leaders. But right now, the government is increasingly controlled by these religious zealots who were important in other governments in terms of being able to extract benefits from the government, but not so much in terms of directing its foreign or its military policy. And now they are, and they're going for broke. I don't know. Like Israel's a giant mess now. Its economy is in collapse. And it's got massive emigration problem with Jews leaving. It's having trouble keeping its reserve-based military in full force because the reservists don't want to come back. They're tired of fighting. They're not used to this type of thing. So I don't know. I think there's gonna be probably a lot of chaos for a while. Maybe Syria is gonna be de facto or even de jure sliced up and no longer really exist anymore, the way Libya doesn't, the way Somalia doesn't. I mean, these are what they call the failed states. Maybe that's what's going to happen to it. But the thing is, the last thing I'm going to say is, I think the United States, like, the best thing that's happened to the United States in a long time was being chased out of Afghanistan, because being in Afghanistan made the United States weaker. Leaving Afghanistan, it was like closing up a gaping wound. And for Russia, there's a lot of people in Russia who are saying, I told you so to Putin, that he shouldn't have been in Syria in the first place. And I'm not saying he shouldn't have been or should have been. But to a lot of people in Russia, leaving Syria, while it may be an embarrassment or a humiliation, if they wind up pulling out of Syria and concentrating on matters of greater import to their future, then that in the long run is a plus. So I don't know. I'm throwing that out and kicking it back to you.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, the argument that Russia dropped the ball here is that now Iran is vulnerable, and it's not only vulnerable, but it's vulnerable in a way that, you know, now you've got the Trump administration coming in, which is full of Zionists. I'm going to play a clip which kind of encapsulates this kind of anxiety, let's say, by, what's his name? General Jack Keane. You know, this is what he thinks is on the menu.
We have the opportunity now to neutralize this regime once and for all. Why? Just look at what happened. Hamas and Hezbollah decimated. The number one strategic client in the region, which was enabling them to dominate and control the region, is Syria. They just lost it. They are completely defenseless at home. They have a weak conventional military, and they have no air defense system to protect their strategic assets. What President Trump can do coming into power is issue an ultimatum along with the prime minister of Israel and the Arab nations to the Iranian leader and tell them, number one, you are going to dismantle your nuclear enterprise. You are going to stop providing assistance to your proxies. You are going to tell your proxies to stand down in the region. The alternative, maximum toughest sanctions that will bankrupt your country. Number two, surgical kinetic strikes to cripple your nuclear enterprise and to destroy the remaining rockets and missiles. He has to do that in conjunction with the prime minister. Okay, can we do it diplomatically, or do we have to do it kinetically? Okay.
So there you go.
Yeah. I think the guy's a fool. Honestly, I think he's a fool. For Iran, okay, what does Iran get out of having a land bridge to Hezbollah? Okay, well, then Iran gets to support Hezbollah and it gets a certain amount of street cred. But really, Iran's involvement in Palestinian politics hasn't really been it's not an economic plus for it. So right now it doesn't have the land bridge to Hezbollah. There's a lot of rubble in Lebanon. Gaza's completely rubble. But Iran, I mean, the Iranian economy, okay, you're going to put on more sanctions. The Iranian economy has been sanctioned for 45 years. And actually, the past few years, it's been doing a lot better. So economically, it's not weak. It's able to sell its oil. It has control over its oil fields. It's able to sell its oil. And what's been happening the past few years, it's joined BRICS. BRICS and related organizations are creating avenues for bypassing the American-dominated, dollar-dominated economic system. And so, Iran's not that vulnerable. And it's increasingly having a strategic relationship with Russia and China. So this guy saying, oh, we're going to we are going to issue Trump and Netanyahu, and they're going to get these Arab countries to join in. Well, with Israel going haywire, there was a time when Saudi Arabia was more worried about Iran than it was about Israel. But a couple of years ago, about a year and a half ago or so, last year, the Chinese brokered a peace deal between Iran and Saudi Arabia. And with Israel going absolute hog wild, and with the
people often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Well, hello, folks. This is Mike Gatti, the Rebel Madman at Republic Broadcasting Network. If you are searching for your inner rebel, it can be found at the Dixie Republic. It's the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to thedixierepublic.com to view all of their Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through their extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in their Johnny Reb gun and leather shop. Now remember, dixierepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Last year, the Chinese brokered a peace deal between Iran and Saudi Arabia. And with Israel going absolute hog wild, and with the publics in these Arab countries just appalled at Israel, the publics in the Arab countries could overthrow their own countries, their own governments, if their governments start cooperating with Israel against Iran at this point. So, I think this guy doesn't make any sense. And most generals, I can't think of a single general in the United States that really makes any sense.
My instinct is Israel needs to be destroyed. It's a cancer, and it's a problem, and I think they should have destroyed it a long time ago.
Well, you know who's going to destroy Israel? I don't think it's going to be Putin. I don't think it's going to be the Iranians. I think it's going to be Netanyahu and the Ben Gavir and Smoltrich and this lot. I think they're Israel is going to self destruct. That's the way I see it, and it's in the process.
Probably.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you look at Israel. Okay, the Jews finally get a state, and what do they do with the state? It's a pariah. They just do anything they want. They consider themselves completely above international law, and the world hates them. And you know, then they scream anti-Semitism after everything that they're doing. So it's self-destructive behavior. Countries don't have a right to exist. So Israel doesn't have a right to exist. No state has a right to exist. It's not part of international law. It's not part of the Anglo-American tradition. The Soviet Union didn't have a right to exist, and neither did Yugoslavia, and neither did the Ottoman Empire. So
I agree.
Yeah.
And those Palestinians, they never get a break, do they?
They never get a break. And they are the martyrs. And if anything good comes out of this giant mess, those martyred Palestinians will deserve the world's thanks. That's all I can say. Mm. Yeah.
And aside, I don't know how much of it's propaganda or how much oppression was going on there, but I wish him well. Apparently he's in Russia somewhere, so with his family. The Russians have said they're not going to disclose his location. So, you got a guy who wanted to be an eye doctor, and and you end up having to deal with Syria. I mean, I wish him well.
Yeah,
frankly.
You look at if you're going to be leader of a country, Sweden or Switzerland or whatever, which seems like a nice country, but look at what goes on. People who lead countries, at the end of the day, they're often faced with the decision between being ruthless and cutthroat on the one hand, or having their own throats cut by ruthless people on the other. And it's for spectators, for backseat drivers or Sunday morning quarterbacks. It's really easy to say, oh, this guy should do that or this or that. But I'm sure when you're actually in there, it's not that easy.
No, that's why I've never ventured into politics, because I know my human limitations.
Okay, well, I know the limitation of the time limitation of our program, and we're at it. So I want to thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Patrick.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Hey there, this is Sheila with Hemp Haze by MyNutra. Why is hemp haze better than other CBD options on the market? It's important to point out that the common CBD oil does not contain CBDA or CBGA, and they're only found in fresh or raw hemp products, like hemp haze. Hemp haze contains the entire plant, minus any stems. This means the product retains the complete genetic code of the plant, which also includes those two vital cannabinoids, CBGA and CBDA. Over and over, experts keep saying the more intact or less processed the hemp plant is, the more effective it is. Happy hemp paste.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org. And visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Call 855-656-8872. Mention RBN.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network.
Visit RepublicBroadcasting.org today, because you can handle